from John chapter 20. Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written, so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. So far our text. So I brought something in. I brought a box in. It's a shoe box, actually. Make sure I put this in here right. You guys might do this as well, but I keep letters and notes and certain things that were important to me, and I kind of keep them in a box. And in here, I've also included a couple books. But I wanted to share with you because these were important to me, and they served a specific purpose for why they were written and why I keep them around. The first one here is not that exciting for you, probably, but it was exciting for me. It's a college paper I had to write, and it was on a subject I was interested in, but the funny story about this was it was like 20 pages, and I left it off to the last minute and had to do it all in one night. So I wrote it all in a single night, and that was pretty dumb of me, but you could say the whole purpose of me writing this was to learn something, but also to get an A in the class. I didn't do as well as I'd hoped, but I got it done, and I keep it around because it's a fun topic, and I like it. But that's what you could say was the purpose for this. I have, it's a little embarrassing, but I do have a few letters and notes to flatter a young lady. So you could say I wrote these, you know, to try to get myself a girlfriend. And I gave these letters to her, you know, kind of swoon her in some way, I don't know. But surprisingly, based off reading these for a second time, she said yes. So I don't know why. But you could say this was the purpose for the whole thing, was so I could, you know, go on a date. It worked for a time, so that was nice. The next thing I have here is, it's actually a book, pretty important to me. It's The Hobbit. It's probably my favorite book. That's why it's important to me. But I liked it a lot. It's entertaining. You could say the whole purpose of Tolkien writing this was to entertain people. Maybe think about life a little deeper. Think about things. But certainly to fantasize and be led on an adventure. And I think he definitely accomplished that with this. At least for me. Now the last thing. This one's one of those education books. This is a book I had to read in seminary, and it's called What Does This Mean? And you could say the whole purpose of this book was to tell you what this means, to teach you something, to give you something to learn. Ironically, the author definitely fulfilled his purpose because I had no idea what he was talking about, so I didn't really learn what it meant. What does this mean? But I only share these with you because I wanted to point out and show that each of these things, no matter how, you know, childish or whatever they are, served a specific purpose for their writing. There's a reason I wrote, why people had written to me, or why others continue to write things or put out material, whether it be even emails or simple letters, a card, a paper for class. There's a purpose behind them. Even when you write stories, there's a goal that you have in mind. And it's true of even the Bible. Because in what our gospel reading today from John in this passage is not only speaking of his gospel, but we could say it applies to the whole scriptures, to everything a part of the Bible, that the purpose of these things is that you may believe Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and believing you have life in his name. I don't know if you all have a bit of a cynical disposition like me, but you might be wondering that I occasionally do, like I will do. Couldn't the authors have come up with something a little more compelling? Or more of a convincing book, maybe? I mean, if this book, if John's Gospel, if the whole Bible is written so that you or I may believe, shouldn't they, or maybe the church, have put together something different. Maybe something more convincing. Because especially as I consider this day and age, the day and age we live in, it seems people are no longer convinced by the scriptures. Shouldn't we be gathering together a book with some different sets of data? Maybe some statistics? Pieces of evidence? Somewhere to look, to find, to put together, to cross-reference, and place down in a new kind of book. Charts of the places Jesus had been and why we know it's true. People are always talking about do your own research. Shouldn't we put together and collect in a document, a book, the research needed to convince someone, to persuade others? I mean, if we had a writing like that, I don't know about you, but for me, it would make dealing with atheist friends, those agnostic family members, difficult academics, or those proud New Age people, would make dealing with them a little easier. Certainly, many have tried. You've seen the books, perhaps, maybe you've even gotten them. They try to convince you and bring you in and persuade you that this is true. But those aren't the things I'm talking about. I'm talking about maybe a new kind of scriptures for us to put in the world. Something that's more compelling. Get the right scientists, the honest archaeologists, the people that are striving for truth and the truth of the story of Jesus Christ. Maybe if we dig and search harder for this indisputable evidence, then people will have to believe. If John's going to tell us that the purpose of the gospel story, the purpose of the scriptures, is so that others may believe Jesus is the Christ, that Jesus is the Son of God, that Jesus is Lord and King of creation, this collection of books that we have may have ran its course. Because it doesn't seem to convince anymore. But it continues to be passed down to us. And we have these compilation of books written over a few thousand years, and the last bit right there, the New Testament, last set of first 70 years it took them to compile it. But it's 2,000 years old. I know it's not something that's actually going to happen, but is it unreasonable to suggest that we could be doing more? That we could be doing a lot better than just these old texts? Well, perhaps we wouldn't be so different from Thomas. Thomas, as you know from our reading, he wanted more convincing. He needed more convincing, apparently. And as we see in the gospel lesson in John, Thomas wasn't so privileged to be there when Jesus first appeared. Because Jesus makes his appearance to the 10 disciples, all in his resurrected glory for the first time. And Jesus does something spectacular, if you think about it. In that moment, he arrives and he decides to use them, to send them out, to give them the Holy Spirit, to commission them to preach the good news of Jesus' resurrection, his death and resurrection. And they receive that by receiving the Holy Spirit. But this is the cool part. Thomas wasn't there. And so when Thomas returned after Jesus left, these 10 disciples, the church who's committed to giving the message of Jesus' resurrection, guess who they get to tell first of this good news? Their own brother, their good friend Thomas. Thomas is one of the first people to hear the message of the gospel from the church. And Thomas hears it, receives the word that is spoken from his brothers, and he didn't believe. He didn't believe them to be telling the truth. It's a rough start for the new church. Thomas, who followed Jesus the whole time, who was there with Jesus and became brothers and developed deep friendships with these disciples, he didn't believe what they had to say. And it's not that he doubted or something. He simply said, unless I see his hands, put my hand in his side, I will never believe. That's pretty high demand. Thomas, rather than trust and receive the message from his 10 brothers, his people he's known, Tom wanted to believe the message on his own terms. He wanted ownership. Whatever it was, because he may have felt left out or was maybe even just skeptical from the start for not being there, Thomas would only receive this or hear this or receive this news based on what he wanted and what he desired. Based on what he decided, it was on his own terms. For his own purposes, I don't know, for his own assurances. And that would be the only grounds that he would hear and receive the message. I mean, we wouldn't do that. We're the people that Jesus would say later when he does show up and talk to Thomas. We're the people that are, blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Certainly we haven't seen Jesus in person, and so because, you know, he ascended, but we're the blessed. So Tom, get it together. Let's put aside your pride. Well, maybe we're not so different than Thomas. I remember I got in, as you do for some reason, in high school. Got in an argument with a friend over similar things, not this particularly, but they couldn't understand how a loving God could allow bad things to happen. And more so, he couldn't understand how Christians could be perpetrators of harmful and evil things. I imagine you've heard those things before. Maybe been a part of it, experienced it. But I got in an argument with him over it. Maybe because I'm a bit high-strung about it and was a bit of a zealous person at that point. But I thought I knew what I was talking about pretty well. And he didn't really know what he was arguing about. So I was able to kind of point out his misconceptions, using my previous knowledge, refute his dumb claims. And I know I came out on top. And you know when you win an argument. You know how you win an argument. You know when you won. It's when they throw their hands up in the air and they're side like, and they say something like, I don't want to talk about this anymore. Let's just drop it. But you know, no one actually wins. If anything, we just looked at one another with a little more contempt. The growth of our friendship came to a halt. And it's funny that in the middle of it all, it never occurred to me that this is a person whom God created and whom Jesus came for. And I treated them as someone who needed to be destroyed. And to be honest, I think I needed to be assured of what I believed. As people, we can be pretty adamant about seeking our own assurances, our own protection, our own self-security, our own defenses, so we don't have to face the unknown, or be left out, or look like the fool. As Christians, we sometimes think we can lord over the scriptures and manipulate the information around it to prove our own point. And if we don't manipulate it, we can certainly beat it over people's heads, beat them into submission. And oftentimes, I wonder if it's only because we need to make it more believable to me. Maybe we're not so different from Thomas. And you could feel like Tom and see your brothers and sisters who seem to have it all put together and feel and seem so in touch with Christ, and you feel left out, that you're not as special for the Lord to include you in his visitation. Whether it be through material blessings or different circumstances of life. And you might have reasonable requests to God. Lord, I will believe if you would just show yourself to me in this part of my life. If you would heal this loved one, if you would deliver me from this suffering, if you would only show yourself to me in this way by making this happen, by giving me this, then I'll believe. Yeah, I would like it if faith could be on my own terms. But what John gives us is what he describes as the Word. And it's the Word that takes hold of us and changes us. And by the Word, I'm not talking about the Bible. John's Gospel gives us this beautiful opening at the beginning. And it's where we get the Word, of course. The Word. And he begins, "In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God." And John does not reach the climax of this prologue in his gospel by saying, "And the Word was written down." No, the climax for John is that the Word became flesh. And it's flesh that appears before the disciples. And it's Jesus in the flesh which appears before Thomas. And Jesus says to Thomas, "Put your finger here, see my hands. Put your hand in my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe." The fact of the matter is, we want to be assured of the faith we believe. And there's nothing wrong with those pursuits. That's why we hold the Bible so closely. That's why we defend it vehemently to those who are hostile to it. But we miss the whole point of why we look towards the Scriptures for our assurances. Why we continue to read its story and the message told by these witnesses and authors. Because the Scriptures, the Bible itself, is not written to give us the right answers. It's not written to give us something to beat over people's heads, not to give us thoughtful proverbs, moral cause. It's not written to justify you doing certain things or admonishing certain people around you. It's not written so that we can argue with pagans and other religions. These things are written to tell a story of God and his creation. These are written to show how humanity messed with God's creation. And it's the story of how God decided to restore and renew everything by sending his own Son. These are written to show that the Son of God, the Word, in which the creation came into existence, actually became flesh and dwelt among his own. And these are written to show how that same people rejected and killed him, putting him on the cross. And it's the story of how this Jesus, the Son of God, rose from the dead to defeat death, to defeat sin, and to restore and renew God's creation and offer salvation to all who trust in him. The truth is that John's Gospel, the entire Bible, and the books that are in it, they did not just fall out of the sky into the apostles' lap. But these were written by members of the church, by Christians, who witnessed the Word in flesh, the person of Jesus Christ. And these Christians continued to speak that word of Christ's resurrection, giving that news, and they were speaking it to others, living in love. And then the church decided it needed to be written down. Not to push an agenda or some sort of ideology or specific set of values, but to do precisely what John says so straightforwardly. These are written so that you may believe Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and by believing you might have life in his name. You are brought into that story, not on your own terms, but on God's terms, in which Jesus claims you from the broken world and puts you in his care. You are redeemed by the word that became flesh, who took on the brokenness and the doubts and the disbeliefs and puts them to death. And you receive the word right at your baptism, in which the Lord has claimed you and put his name on you with real water and his word. And he gives you physical sustenance with the Lord's Supper and bread and water to give you his flesh and blood so that you could be assured of who he is and what he promises you. It's the word that brought creation into existence, and it's the same word that creates new life in you. And it creates you into the type of person you're supposed to be, God's own. The word renews you and assures you that it's not up to you to figure it out, to have all the right answers. But instead, it promises and claims you so that you can go and be Christ in the flesh to others. Whether it be those atheist friends or coworkers who would like nothing better to do than to get in an argument with you. Whether it be a family member who struggles to understand how all these religions can claim to have the ultimate truth. No, this story of God is not something humanity conjured up or something we have to defend with excuses. It's just what the Lord in his love has shown and revealed in Jesus Christ for you. And what the Lord shows is how you are made to be part of his story, and how God in Jesus Christ continues his story through you. These are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Son of God, and by trusting in him and his word, you will have life in his name. In his name. Amen.